This is Lennon Mishi from the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network, community-led strategies for creative and heritage-based interventions in sub-Saharan Africa. We are funded through the Arts and Humanities Research Council and the Global Challenges Research Fund to explore how approaches from the arts and humanities can address contemporary forms of enslavement by adopting a community-engaged human rights focus that delivers development impacts. In this podcast, we discuss some of the commissioned work that has been produced through the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network and their collaborating partners. Hi, I'm Lennon from the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network, and we're here in Kenya, Nairobi, with Geoffrey and Diana from Yorit. Uganda.
Exactly.
Can you please introduce yourselves and tell us a bit more about the project?
Thank you very much, Lennon. I am Geoffrey Omony, the director of Youth Leaders for Restoration and Development, what Lennon just called it, YOLRED. This is an organization which is by and for the former child soldiers to actually create a platform where child soldiers are able to handle their own issues through this organization. And it is based in Gulu, which is in the northern part of Uganda.
Diana?
Thank you. I am Alaroke Diana Opira. I work with YOLRED as the accountant and also a social worker.
Yes, would you like to tell us about some of the highlights of the work that you've been doing so far?
I am happy for this time to speak about some of the highlights of the work that we have been doing. One key one is we have been using our culture. How do we use our culture to make sure that we are able to attain healing psychologically, emotionally, and physically? So we have been able to get community participants and the former child soldiers engaged in this and fully participating. And this is one thing that we are doing. We were looking at some key outputs. Of course, one is the cultural festival, which actually has managed to get on board a lot of community members and former child soldiers in a participatory nature. And of course, also one of the other thing that we are looking at is about how do we get the voices of former child soldiers heard through this work. And the other thing that I wanted to highlight is about also the safeguarding that we are doing now, which looks at how can we get into formulating a guiding policy that safeguard the former child soldiers, researchers, and also community members. And when we do this work, we are able to make sure that everyone involved in the research is safe.
Mm. So, Dan, Geoffrey just talked about how you've tried to use culture, and I'm assuming this is a reference to some of the performances, traditional dances, and so forth. What are your thoughts on the use of these sort of arts and humanities-based approaches with the research that you've also been doing? And how they useful? How useful have these been, you know, in what you've been doing?
Well, I feel like the culture, like the music performance, has helped in healing trauma. I mean, especially the emotional part of it, whereby the community, I mean, the ex-combatants, when they come together to perform, they feel relaxed, and also the playing of musical instruments has also helped in the emotional part of it. As they are playing the musical instruments, they meditate on the lyrics of the songs, and this has really helped in the healing, yeah, emotionally.
Additionally, I think to add on to what Diana has said, I think there has been a lot of power in actually getting these people together through the dance, drama, and music, because everyone would be interested in performing, and at the end, it's not only former child soldiers. We have also the community where former child soldiers stayed. They also get together. And at the end, you realize that this has been very effective in creating community cohesion and allowing former child soldiers and also the community members to come together and interact and to learn more and know better each other.
Mm-hmm.
And also through these musical performances, we've registered success. There was this one group. They were isolated and neglected in the community. People look at them as being group of drunkards, because what they would do, they would come together, then after performing, they would drink. And at the end of it all, nothing was seen. I mean, nothing good was coming out of the group. But when we intervened and we brought up this issue, like every end of year, we have these cultural performances, we talk about issues, I mean, address the different issues that are going on in their communities through the music, dance, and drama. This group started changing slowly by slowly. Some of them stopped even drinking. There was this guy who had a bar and decided to switch into another business, because this was like him being the leader of the group was kind of influencing the group negatively. But later on, he thought of changing another business, and we started seeing changes in the group. There was this lady who was also in the group. Actually, some of the community members testified on the group. They said, yeah, we thought this group was going nowhere, but when we saw how the group has been transformed, yeah, like people from the community started coming in to join the group. Now the group has expanded from 30, I think, to about 60 now. Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the key challenges in the work that you've been doing, either in terms of the methods that you've been trying to utilize, or just in general in terms of engagement with either the sculptors or the community?
I think the first one was building trust. It was really hard to engage these people at the beginning, because they didn't trust us, because we had a lot of NGOs who like came on board. They promised them things, they mistreated them and all that stuff. So most of them were not willing. There are others who said, I'm done working with NGOs or any organization. I just want to focus and do my own stuff. But later on, some say, let me try. If this one fails, then I'll never involve myself with any organization. So later on, when they started seeing results, like we'll do something, like in most cases, we'll tell them, we are trying this out, we want to see how it will work. Then later on, when something tangible comes out, they'll be like, yeah, I think we can trust you. So we've at least built that trust. But at the beginning, it was quite challenging.
Mm.
Supplementarily on the issue of trust, I think it has all resonated from the disappointment that they have had actually from other NGOs that they had been working with. Because the approach itself was challenging. Like, Lennon, you can sit back in the UK and then you begin generating and thinking that most probably this idea could be good for Geoffrey, who is based in northern Uganda. And then you do all your paperwork and then you get the funding. And then on reaching the ground, this is not what I want. So this become a problem at the end. You see people losing trust, but on realizing that this organization is particularly by and for them, some of them started coming back slowly. Mm-hmm. And our approach has been very good. We never do anything without a consultation. So if you want to do anything, we call them. So this is what we are thinking we could do. What are your thoughts? Mm-hmm. So we actually take their comments and then have things done, which is quite different from the way that things were being done before. And so right now, as we speak, it's not very simple for you, Lennox, if you are to go in Gulu and without your red as an organization, and you say you want to go and meet them, it won't be possible for you. So they really have a lot of trust now on the organization. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that particular kind of consensus building and trust emanates from the fact that the organization is both from but is also based in the community?
Exactly. It's a local organization. More particularly, it's designed and being run by former child soldiers themselves. I am a former child soldier. So the organization was designed by us. We know what they want. So this create a very good ground for them to have no doubt. However, even if they trust us, sometimes it becomes very challenging, because if you ask that what are some of the challenges, trust is one of them, which already they trust the organization, but other issues remain untackled. Because when you look at the issue of sending their children to school, the issue of space, they need at least land so that they can settle with their children, and then the issue of empowerment. These are people who cannot apply anywhere in a formal job setting, so they need something that can actually help them to generate income to allow them take care of their family. And this remains a very big challenge. Of a recent, when we were having a focus group discussion, we actually had this coming up from one of the participants, that now we are doing this research, you're calling us, you're speaking to us, but we don't see anything tangible happening. Mm. So what have we got to do with this? Our challenges still remain.
Mm.
So we had to say, no, this is a research, but of course we hope that something would happen with the output. This is how we were trying to respond to them. So that means that expectation it's still there.
How do we
go about handling just kind of expectations?
Yes,
it's a challenge and a big one.
What sorts of support then would you, going forward, be looking at, either to, as you're saying, expand, upscale your work, or to engage different stakeholders who might be able to provide those different kinds of supports or meet the different needs going forward?
One thing that I really value and look at it so much is the network. I believe AKN is a network. So we can be linked to funders that can actually help in responding to these issues, because AKN particularly might not be having of funding to support other to address other needs that we have. KAKN might be focusing on research, but then when it comes to empowerment, AKN might not be able to support it. But we trust that through this network, AKN can link the organization to other funding source that would be able to address these issues, like maybe getting a piece of land for some of them who are in critical need, so that they are able to settle with their children.
Mm.
So these are the things that we feel can be done.
And in terms of the outputs and impacts, I know you have worked on the performance in the festival. You have a comic and an animated film coming out. How are you looking at those impacts going forward?
I am looking at this as being widely distributed through the next one, the network of AKN, and also our local network. So most probably this can tell the entire world what the needs are, and if there are people who would come across it, read, take interest, would be interesting, because we don't know what might come out after this output. So it would be interesting, except with the comic now, which most probably will be out in the middle of April and May. We are looking towards screening them at a local, national, and international level.
Mm.
And most probably, we might not be having the resources to help us do this.
Mm.
So if AKN would actually support us in making sure that these are screened at local, national, and international level, then it would still help in disseminating further the voices of former child soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Any other key issues that you might want to highlight from this work that you've been doing, learning points, takeaways?
I have one particular one, because in the mind of people, right from local, national, and international level, former child soldiers are looked at as hopeless people, and they can't do anything helpful, either to themselves or to the community. But look at myself here with my colleagues. What are we doing? We are trying to look for a way of the possibilities of how we can solve our own challenges. And this is an indication to the world, and a lesson to the world, that things happen in life, but we do not need to overlook at the victims as being hopeless, and then using a specific language against them that put them in a position of vulnerability. And so I think this should be a very strong message, and in particular I want to say a very, very big thank you to AKN, because it's hardly almost impossible to find people being interested in the work that former child soldiers are doing, and often they are left out. But AKN is actually trying to bring the demoralized, the marginalized, they're giving them the opportunity to get to do things that people wouldn't imagine that could be done by just kind of marginalized group of people.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the time and for sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you for listening to the Anti-Slavery Knowledge Network podcast, Creative Paths to Freedom. For more information on the work that the network is doing, please find us on Twitter, Instagram, and our page on the University of Liverpool website.